Minerva Radio. Less mainstream, more music.
Greetings and a very warm welcome to this, our fifth edition of Brock and Roll with me, Mike Brocken, here on MinervaRadio.uk, brought to you by Caldy Media, of course. And Brock and Roll is based around the history of rock, pop and soul music and the interesting collectibles and fascinating sounds that have emerged from the varied history of all of those genres. And this time out, I'm presenting part two of our consideration of the Decca Record Company and specifically their investigations into the growing countercultural sounds and trends of the late 60s and early 1970s. Our previous show considered the arrival of Decca's DRAM subsidiary, which, thanks to the determination of Decca guy Tony Hall, was established to cater for new acts connected with the cutting-edge hippie and progressive sounds just beginning to emerge in the mid-1960s. It didn't quite work out that way, though. And despite some really great releases, DRAM became a bit of a catch-all for music that could be difficult to categorise, such as the orchestral The Velvet Touch of Johnny Howard, or Whistling Jack Smith's single releases. You know, took it all in, really. The Moody Blues, actually, were perhaps the best example of Decca venturing out both musically and technically, with albums like Days of Future Past and In Search of the Lost Chord, illustrating how progressive sounds could be profitable as well as musically enriching. So, this week I'd like to move Decca's experimentations on by a couple of years, including some of the tracks from the Decca Nova releases. But before this, let's have some sounds from what I consider to be, notwithstanding the Rolling Stones, one of Decca's greatest yet long-forgotten album releases. The album is entitled It'll All Work Out in Boomland, and the band are called, or were called at least, T2. Just a T and a 2. Be prepared to be amazed. Now, this is a long one. The track is from 1970 and is entitled No More White Horses. Thank you. Lovely. I had to wait for the scream at the end. It just isn't the same without the scream. I don't know if you've ever heard that before. 8.5 minutes anyway. So apologies if it was a bit long, but I just think that's great. That's a band that was formed from the ashes of two late 60s bands who'd done quite well as underground bands, and one actually had a chart hit. Bulldog Breed, who we'll play a track from a little bit later, and Gunn. Do you remember Gunn? And they had a hit single as well, didn't they? That's T2, anyway. And No More White Horses from their 1970, I think it's a bit of a masterpiece, really, released on Decca, It'll All Work Out in Boomland. And for me, that's one of the very best Decca album releases in the kind of hard come prog genre, and highly sought after these days by collectors. It goes for hundreds. I did have a copy originally. I bought from Mr. Edwards's in Kensington in Liverpool for about £1, you know, and I did sell it. And then I missed it, and I bought a reissue a few years ago. So I didn't really do very well out of that deal, really. But marvellous stuff. Bernard Jinks and Keith Cross had previously been in Bulldog Breed, whereas Pete Dunton had been a member of Gunn just before they disintegrated. And I think the trio came to people's attention following a successful residency at the Marquee down in London. And they also played the Isle of Wight Festival in 1970 as well. But it was all short and sweet. By the end of 1970, they'd all but moved on in different areas. And there are kind of some post-band tapes that have been knocking around somewhere and have turned into an album, but I don't really think they capture the band at their very best. Okay, so that was T2. Now, the aforementioned Decca Nova experiment from Decca began in 1969, the year that major companies like EMI and Philips had created Harvest and Vertigo just to keep up with the independent competitors like Island Records and Transatlantic Records. And Nova was intended to promote new, non-established progressive acts. As such, albums retailed for only 28 and 6, which if you do your sums, that's less than £1.50. And it was almost 10 bob below the usual price for an LP at that time, which was 37 and 6, which actually soon rose to 39 and 11. There were albums, for example, by a group called Aardvark, Black Cat Bones, the aforementioned Bulldog Breed, Jan Dukes de Grey, who I remember seeing at the Mardi Gras in Liverpool one night. They were really, really good. Egg, who have since become, you know, a very collectible outfit, Pacific Drift, and others. And they all came to flood the record shops with their obligatory cheaper-than-normal albums. And, of course, the equally obligatory sampler album, the Nova Sampler album, which I think retailed for about 15 shillings. So let's have a track from one of those Nova bands, Black Cat Bones, who at one time featured both Paul Kossoff and Simon Kirk, obviously later of Free fame. They'd already long left by the time the Nova album, Barbed Wire Sandwich, great title, was released. But one can hear the influences, I think. So this is Black Cat Bones. Take a listen to Chauffeur.
Be your chauffeur, baby. I'll never be your chauffeur. Well, I gotta ride you. Oh, I just gotta ride you downtown. Downtown. Well, I ride so easy. Down. I won't ride no other girls. I don't need no other girls. I'll be your chauffeur, baby. I just gotta ride you downtown, downtown. Well, I ride so easy. Oh, baby mama, you can't. You know you just can't put me down. I'll be your chauffeur. I won't ride no other girls. Yeah, I just gotta be a chauffeur. I just gotta ride you downtown, baby, downtown. 'Cause I ride so easy. You can't put me down. You can't put me down.
There you go. Like Free, as you can tell, Black Cat Bones were of the sort of blues hard rock school. And that's Chauffeur, which is actually Memphis Minnie's Chauffeur Blues, if you know your blues. And it's from their Decca Nova album called, which I think it's great, Barbed Wire Sandwich. That would put me off for a start. And it didn't sell, even for 28 and 6. And so it remains highly, highly collectible now. I mean, we're talking big money, well into three figures for a good copy of that. Well, the concept of Decca Nova at least seemed like a good idea at the time, but perhaps typically Decca failed to promote each individual album on its merits. From memory, and I'm only really working from memory, all they seemed to do was lump them together and advertise all Nova releases en masse in the music press. So you get like an almost a complete half page of all of these albums, and you get to the bottom of you a bit bored, really. And that caused many artists, many good artists too, to be overlooked. So much so, in fact, there are only three Nova acts recorded follow-up albums at Decca. Clark Hutchinson, Egg, and Bill Fay, from whom we played a track last time out, didn't we? And they went on to record full-priced albums for, yes, you've guessed it, DRAM. So we've gone backwards a little bit there, haven't we? I mean, the amazing thing that about DRAM and Nova, etc., is they probably didn't exploit the album market properly in any case. Decca by this time had done so well on the singles market that really it tended to feel, as a kid of 16 to me, that it was a bit of an afterthought, really. But anyway, the previously mentioned Bulldog Breed had a Nova album as well. It was entitled Made in England, which I would have thought was pretty rubbish, really. And I think they had a matchbox on the cover, you know, a little bit like the old matches. And their connection with T2 proposes a track from me. So let's have this, actually a very nice piece of effects-soaked psych. This is Bulldog Breed and Austin Osman Spur.
Austin Osman Spare, painted daydreams, Victorian satires, ideas in his head. Austin Osman Spare, painted nightmares, does his grandson realize he isn't dead? They said it was before his time, his reproduction's out of line. But now is that they wish him well, is he in heaven or come back from hell? Austin Osman Spare lit black candles. Did he realize his fingers might get burnt? Austin Osman Spare, runic letters, do they symbolize how much he really learnt? They said it was before his time, his reproduction's out of line. But now he said they wish him well, is he in heaven or come back from hell? Thank you. follow. Kiss the cloven hoof, we live eternal years. Austin Osman's spear lives on with us. From these drawings we do worship our ideas.
Bulldog breed. That's, I mean, what were they on? But anyway, it's called Austin Osman Spare, so you can imagine what they're on, really. That's Bulldog Breed from their one LP for Decanova, Made in England. Worth a lot of money these days. And I suppose we could say that, you know, at least the Nova experience did lead Decca to become increasingly more focused on album-orientated artists, although they actually, by the end of 1970, they actually dropped that Nova label on a lot of artists. But over the next 3 years, Decca and DRAM were host to some of the UK and Ireland's finest, with bands like Caravan, East of Eden, Thin Lizzy, Trapeze, Camel, Mellow Candle, the Keith Hartley Band, Hardin and York, and others all enjoying relative success. I mean, Trapeze did massively well, didn't they, in the US? And all of that established Decca as a genuine album label. There were also pre-established names by that time too, such as, you know, we mentioned the Moody Blues before, 10 years after, and Savoy Brown, who had already been doing well. And speaking of 10 years after...
sent my fear. Eyes are filled with tears. I can't keep from crying. In my soul, girl.
Yeah, 10 years after. Very groovy version, I think, of I Can't Keep From Crying Sometimes. And they did the Chip Shop version then, didn't they? And nearly, you can't keep from frying sometimes, can you, really? But that's a great album, you know, which really good album track, which really got their reputation going in the United States. The debut album was released in 67, actually, and following a couple of years, their live reputation grew. Obviously, invited to play Woodstock, who doesn't know that, of course, in 1969. And it was after the Woodstock movie came out in 1970 that they became a stellar attraction. 11 minutes of I'm Going Home, as I remember correctly, on the movie. But before splitting up in 74, really interesting band. Very interesting. Somewhat overrated in some of their work, but decidedly underrated in others. You pay your money and you take your choice, I suppose, don't you? Of all the groups to have emerged from the so-called Canterbury scene, often denied by many, actually, that there was a scene, none were quite as enduring, however, as Caravan. They had one Verve LP and then the label went bust. And Caravan then signed to Decca in 1969, and they rapidly became one of the company's leading underground artists, especially with the successful 1971 album, which was their third in the Land of Grey and Pink. And this is now considered a legendary set, really. And for decades, the band have attracted a devoted live following. I mean, they're still, parts of them are still there, aren't they, the band? You know, they still go out on the road at the thing. And they've outlasted pretty much all of their contemporaries, really. I'm sure you'll know this one. This is from that 1971 Decca album. If you don't, just enjoy this. Caravan and Golf Girl.
In PVC, I chanced upon a golf girl selling cups of tea. She asked me, did I want one? Asked me with a grin. For threepence, you can buy one, full right to the brim. So, of course, I had to have one. In fact, I ordered three so I could watch the golf girl, could see she fancied me. On the golf course, after drinking tea, it started raining golf balls. She protected me. Her name was Pat. We sat under a tree. She kissed me. We go for walks in fine weather.
Of course I had to have one. In fact I ordered three. So
That's a few parties, isn't it? And also the Neil from the Young Ones as well. He did it as well later on, didn't he? Pretty good version, if I remember correctly. What makes it for me is Sinclair's Hammond sound on that. I just think it's a great little sort of chunky little sound all the way through. That's Caravan's Golf Girl, anyway, from 1971. The band are still around, I think, here and there, you know, doing a few bits and pieces. And it's probably that album, In the Land of Grey and Pink, I would think is probably one of Decca's biggest selling alternative bands, really, album. Several classic albums from Caravan, of course, including The Land of Grey and Pink. There was Waterloo Lily, which wasn't as well received, I think, as I remember. For Girls Who Go Plump in the Night is another one. And Cunning Stunts, and there were others as well. And, you know, they became an institution, really. Very English. Really, really English, you know. Great sound. Great sound. Okay, one of the rarest ever folk rock albums to be issued on a major label was to be Mellow Candle's only LP called Swaddling Songs. An Irish band, but Mellow Candle did have a kind of a touch of Fairport Convention about them too. But they also brought with them a nice element of Irish mysticism in their sound. Very interesting stuff. By 1971, they'd signed to DRAM, with that album, Swaddling Songs, being released the following year, 1972 or so, I think it was. It took ages for it to come out anyway. Of course, it came out to, it must be stated, massive indifference, and that's made it incredibly collectible now. But it's now also thankfully regarded as something of a classic. So let's have a track from the album, Swaddling Songs. This is Mellow Candle and Boulders on My Grave.
Thank you.
Lovely stuff. I love that. Clodagh Simons, who was the vocalist, only 15 apparently at the time. That's Mellow Candle and a bit of diddling. You can't beat a bit of diddling. Boulders on My Grave from the very, very rare Swaddling Songs album, which came out. And I'm not going to tell you. I've just been telling Ian, my producer, about how I did have it and I let it go. But I'm not going to repeat that. It just gives me a headache when I think about it. Never mind, eh? Let's move on. Trapeze. Now, Trapeze were formed in Wolverhampton. Where else, you might say? And in 1968, we were one of the first signings, actually, to the Moody Blues' own label imprint, Threshold. Of course, it was Decca. They managed it, coordinated, pressed everything up. So it was a Decca imprint, really, in many respects. But it gave the Moody's production work a little bit of free time, really. Originally, Trapeze were a five-piece. I only ever remember them as a three-piece, really. But they were originally a five-piece featuring Glenn Hughes, Mel Galley, Dave Holland. He later went on to Judas Priest, didn't he? John Jones and Terry Rowley. And they enjoyed great success in America during the 1970s. I don't know if you've ever heard their debut album. It was produced by John Lodge of the Moody Blues. And it's really good. It displays a really gentler, at times almost folksy side to their music. But of course, that disappeared after Jones and Rowley left, thus providing the world with one of the great hard rock trios, really. Fantastic band. Their second album, Medusa, was released by Threshold in November 1970, and it provides us with this very interesting template sound. Have a little listen to Trapeze and Seafull.
Then take a look, rubbing my eyes, the truth above. Oh, my head starts creeping to where see. stretch out your light to shade in the past. Now he who speaks can't tell in our time.
Faisal as well, yeah. Trapeze there. And that's a real template sound, I think, for their later development too. It's also a sound that reminds me very much of the New Cavern in the late, in the early 1970s, really, before it became, you know, it turned into Eric's, etc. Very, very popular with the punters in the Cavern there. Trapeze. And, of course, by 1974, Glenn Hughes left to join Deep Purple. Okay, as we move towards the culmination of this particular Brock and Roll, let's have three Decca rock-based hit singles. First of all, From East of Eden.
Thank you.
Yeah, I used to be, you know that one, don't you? This Jigger Jig. Well, I used to be a big hit record, that great bit of folk rock, really, and extremely, the band anyway, were extremely popular on the underground circuit of the late 1960s, especially in Europe, in actual fact. And I think that there was only one extremely rare single that they released for Atlantic, you know, before they actually switched to DRAM in 1969. I've never seen that Atlantic single. That must be worth a few bob too. But they did record two very well-received albums, Mercator Projected and Snafu. And I won't tell you what that means. You probably already know. But their popularity, which was very, very big in Europe, was kind of enhanced, but also reduced a bit by that one-off hit. Hit singles could be frowned upon, couldn't they, by the counterculture? And also, by the time it came out and was a hit, they switched labels to Harvest anyway, so it didn't do them much good, really. All right, let's have a second hit single from Decca's underground years. And it comes from one of the few German bands to achieve a top 20 single on the UK charts. Really famed in West Germany. The Rattles served their apprenticeship at the Star Club. They knew the Beatles very well. And throughout the 60s, they tended to cover British material for a German audience, you know, in German, of course. So, as with many UK artists by the turn of the decade, they also went heavy. And The Witch, surprisingly, became a sizable British hit single for them in July 1970. So let's see if you remember this. This is The Rattles and The Witch.
See me running, I be running for my life. It's the way I'm coming. Guess why I'm running for my life. Can't you see the witch? Can't you see the witch? Can't you see the witch by my side? Can't you see the witch?
I mean, it's pop, really, isn't it? And it owes its existence to Led Zeppelin and Steppenwolf and the Guess Who, doesn't it? But it worked really well in It's Nice and Short. And that was The Rattles, who simply returned to their domestic market after that 1970 year. They had a 71 album out for Decca too, but I don't think that did much over here. All right, well, we're getting towards the end of the show. So finally, another hit single from 1970. But this is the album version. And we couldn't go out really without playing one from the Moody Blues, could we? It's a top five chart hit during the summer of 1970 and featured on their number one selling album, A Question of Ballast. It could only be Question by the Moody's. I'll see you soon. We'll be right back.
Why do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door? With a thousand million questions about hate and death and war. Cause when we stop and look around us, there is nothing that we need. In a world of persecution that is burning in its greed. It's not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way that you mean it when you tell me what will be. And when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, lose the love I knew could safely lead me through. Between silence of the mountains and the crashing of the sea, there lies a land I once lived in, and she's waiting there for me. But in the gray of the morning, my mind becomes confused between the dead and the sleeping and the I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, to lose the love I knew could safely lead me to the land. Learn as we grow the secrets of our soul. It's not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way you really mean it when you tell me what will.